Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. Got John Cozy back again for a riveting hour of discussion. John, I always look forward to having you on the program. We always have a marvelous, marvelous discussion. I have a confession to make. Oh, I got so wrapped up in what's going on. I always mean to review your article ahead of the program, so what your latest article, so what you wrote, I have fresh in my mind. And because of what's going on, and of course today, Obama took his official oath of office a little while ago. I think it was about an hour ago. Chief Justice John Roberts administered it. Tomorrow is all pomp and theater and ceremony, the public stuff. It'll go on for hours, ad nauseum, let me add. So I've been focusing on that. I hate to make an apology, but I'll just let you jump in and discuss what you wrote and whatever else is on your mind. Welcome, John.
Oh, welcome, Steve. I'm not a bit concerned about your not reading my article. Well, apparently nobody has.
Oh, no. Well, you title it "Violence: The American Way of Life." I mean, that line alone. You cover a lot of ground. You cover history. You cover a lot of things that fill in the details of what's happened in the past to give people context about what to think about now. But I've written a lot myself about violence as an American way of life. It literally is part of the culture, John, as you know.
It is the culture, not part of the culture.
So true.
So, anyhow, my piece, you know, is no great shakes. I started out by pointing out that Americans love to do things that don't work and do them over and over and over again. Pointed out that Carrie Nation, used her little hatchet to chop away at consumption of alcoholic beverages and failed miserably, even though she got, the Constitution changed for a short while. And, then what do we turn around and do? Well, we go to a war on drugs where we're going to ban all sorts of substances. That has gone on now and resulted in the killings of thousands of people and wrecked lives of even more than that. Now apparently the trenches, the walls of the trenches are coming down. That effort didn't work either. So, and now, people are screaming to do it one more time with a ban on various types of guns. And I say to myself, well, I don't know. I was in the infantry, so I have used guns in my life and had guns when I was a child. When I was a child, nobody was screaming about guns.
No, when I was a child, my dad was in World War One, and he brought home a souvenir. I don't know if it was our weapon or the Germans' weapon or a French weapon or whatever. He was in France. He brought home a pistol. It was in his desk drawer. It wasn't locked. I looked at it once in a while. He never said anything about it. I never asked him. It wasn't loaded. It almost never came to my mind. I was in the Army. I fired rifles. And I don't think I ever fired a pistol, but I fired rifles. I fired a submachine gun, and that was in the 1950s. And I never touched another gun or saw one except holstered on a cop on Chicago streets. I never made a big deal out of guns, but we know, John, that guns kill. Indeed, they do. There are many thousands of killings in America every year. Of course, they say people kill, not guns. Well, if they didn't have guns, maybe they'd do it another way. They just wouldn't do as much of this.
Yeah, the point of my, well, let me finish and we'll talk about it. Then I went on to say that, the gun isn't really the cause of violence in America. the love of guns in America is caused by the violent culture in America. You know, if we didn't have a violent culture, nobody would care two bits about, you know, who had a gun. It's because we have a violent culture that we then arm that produces all of the gun violence that we see. That's just the way it is. It's too bad, but that's just the way it is. And given our history with trying to keep products and practices that people want to engage in out of their hands just does not work, has never worked, and ain't going to work now. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not against laws against guns. Sure, I am. I mean that I'm against laws against guns. I'm not. Sure we ought to have laws against guns, but what I'm against is people, this wide-eyed notion that somehow or other those laws against guns are going to matter. They're not. Nothing's going to change if we have assault weapons or other kinds of things. You can't change a violent culture by outlawing practices. It just doesn't work. I mean, no law has ever been written that's eliminated the practice the law was aimed at in the first place. Just think of prostitution. How many centuries, has prostitution been illegal? It goes on. People do it. They're going to do it because they want to. And, we can talk all we want about keeping weapons out of people's hands, but there's no way to do it. If we can't keep marijuana out of the hands of fifth graders, how in the world are you going to keep guns out of the hands of people? And I don't know it's just feel good stuff that we're doing, trying to pass these laws, and that's okay. Feel good stuff is better than feel bad stuff. I don't have anything against any of that, but you got to realize that it ain't going to work. And if you really want to get rid of the violence in America, you have to start doing things to change the culture, and if you change the culture, then the gun problem will go away. Because I don't think we're going to change the culture. But
how on earth do you change a culture, John, that literally has been embedded since before the beginning of the Republic? I agree with you. They can pass all the laws and regulations they want. It won't change a thing. Three decades ago, after Reagan was shot, we got the Brady Bill. I think whatever other provisions were in it, it mandated background checks. Well, anybody can go to a gun show, and maybe even gun dealers, and buy these assault weapons that can mow down dozens to people at the same time. Convicted felons can easily get these dangerous assault weapons. Again, you can put all the laws you want on the books. They don't change a thing.
No, they don't change, they don't change anything. And it's a strange thing. I thought a lot about it even after I sent the article out. You got to realize that. Now, I know a number of families, who live around here. All of which have guns. I also know that most of these families have not used the guns that they have for decades. I mean, they bought them when somebody in the family was young and wanted to hunt or whatever. Then he grew up and gave up that nonsense. They're going out to try to kill a duck in the cold, wet weather. Got to be too onerous for an American, so he stays at home, buys his duck meat in the grocery store, and all that's fine. But You know, they don't use them, but and they're some of them are locked up and some of them are not, you know, and all that kind of stuff. If those guns disappeared tomorrow, these families, nothing would change in these families a bit. Nothing would change. But if you went to them and told them they were going to take their guns, they would be livid. You know, I mean, and that's a cultural problem. It's got nothing to do with the gun. And that's the kind of thing we face in this country. We have that kind of thing going on. I mean, people have. I mean, the gun. And then, well, yeah. And I went on to try to show how important the gun has been in America. You know, the colonists came over here and found that thought they were finding a new world and found a world already inhabited by people. So what do? They got out their guns. I mean, you know, the Pico War in Massachusetts. What did they do? They raid a Pico village at night, burned it down, to try to burn the inhabitants to death, and any who managed to get out of their hutches, they shot. You know, now, that was before it was a nation. I mean, that's America. These people who came over here from England, you know, were not enlightened. Enlightened people. They were not tolerant people. The Puritans of Massachusetts, you know, I call them impure Puritans, but the Puritans of Massachusetts didn't like the Quakers in Philadelphia, and I'm not sure how many of them liked the Catholics in Maryland. You know, I mean, this was not a harmonious society by any means. So you have to ask yourself, you know, well, you know, what kind of people were they? They were violent people. That's what they were. I mean, you know, and all you got to do is look at history to prove it. I say in the article, you know, Lincoln is known as the great emancipator. You know, he emancipated those slaves by killing 750,000 Americans. Oh, that's a great accomplishment. You know, give him a medal for that. I pointed out that Tsar Alexander of Russia at the same time, in the 1860s, freed millions of Russian serfs just by signing a piece of paper without killing a single soul. But, oh, you know, what, Russians are? Horrible Russians are doing something like that? Yeah, I mean, we live in a dream world here. And then I, you know, I wanted on to point out that after the Civil War, we conquered the continent. How? Well, with the gun. We even have guns, you know, colloquially referred to as the guns that won the West. Now, we shot our way to the Pacific Coast. We didn't do it, you know, in any civilized way. And you know, that's the way it goes, and we're still doing it today, except it's no longer just here. I mean, what did we do? We wanted to eliminate the drug trade in America, and we killed hundreds of thousands of Mexicans who had nothing to do with it. You know, I mean, that's the way it goes with our guns. Mexicans don't make guns. Mexicans don't import guns. We kill them with our guns. So I mean, that's the way America does things. And now, when you go over to Yemen or Pakistan, the gun has become the drone. The bullet has become the Hellfire missile. Same thing. I call him Pinata, but he's Secretary Panetta. You said the other day that after the Algerian thing, that any terrorist who kills in America is on notice that he should be hunted down, you know, wherever he is and how long it takes, whatsoever. And I thought to myself, yeah, and that's exactly what the guy in the Muslim is doing, saying any American who comes over here is going to be hunted down and I mean, how do you scare a guy who gets up in the morning and puts on his suicide vest by telling him you're going to kill him if you catch him? I mean, that's absurd. That's the American way. I mean, Secretary Pineda didn't say anything at all about trying to solve the problems, the real problems with the Muslim world. No, by God, we're going to kill him. You know, and that's the American way, and that's what I meant by saying that this was the American way of life was violence. It is our culture,
John. It really is, and it really is disgusting, and it's hidden. It's not told to the U.S. public. I mean, anybody can see this going on in plain sight, and it goes on domestically. It goes on abroad. Kids are literally weaned on this kind of stuff. It wasn't that way when you and I were growing up, but today, oh, there was no television when I grew up as a kid. We never had television in our home until I was around a sophomore in high school. It was a novelty then. It was much different than the way it is now. But kids today have all kinds of violence on TV. You've got violent movies. We had them when I was growing up, but they're much more violent now. And, of course, you've got all the cussing and swearing and the stuff that absolutely was not the case way back 5 or 6 decades ago. You've got violent video games. You've got violent music. I mean, you've got all kinds of stuff. I remember an article I wrote almost been 5 years ago. I called America a rape culture. I mean, mass rapes take place, and it's usually done either by a family member or somebody they know very well. It's more unusual. It's the exception to have somebody they have no contact whatsoever assault them, harm them. But this goes on all the time, and I don't remember the statistics. One quick comment. I don't remember the statistics because it was so long ago I wrote about this, but they were staggering when I wrote this. It was like one out of three.
The interesting thing is, you know, the American women activists complain about how women are treated in Afghanistan or Pakistan or the last couple of weeks stuff in India about gang rapes, but they ignore what's going on in America. I mean, you know, how can you really, you know, convince some other culture that it ought to treat women better when in our own society, almost every major city, or perhaps even more than every major city, a lot of minor cities have, sanctuaries for women because of the violence that they're exposed to every day. And yet, but we don't talk about that. You know, we're going to talk about the gang rape in India. It's just absurd the way we cover up our own faults. Talk about lipstick on a pig.
So true, John. I mean, the real truth, the dirty truth get buried, and the fiction substitutes. And that's what another progressive radio host calls the propaganda machine. I think that's a good word. I like to talk about media scoundrels, but the propaganda machine sounds just fine to me. That's what it is, and it doesn't matter. They're all in the same dirty game together. The print media, the broadcast media, radio, television, magazines, newspapers, they're all in the same dirty game together. Public radio, public broadcasting, the BBC, CBC, Al Jazeera, all the same trash.
It's worse than that. It's even worse than that, Stephen. You know, and it's been going on, for probably two centuries, if not longer. I went to college. You went to college. Ever take a history course?
History I learned on my own, John. I can tell you that.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not talking about the history you learned on your own is something else. Did you ever take a history course?
I took a political science course in high school, and I actually had a good teacher. I remember him very well.
In our colleges, you take history courses. They never say anything bad about America. These historians.
Oh, that's right. Well, I read a couple of editions I bought a few. Well, we moved a couple. I think I bought three or four. Howard Zinn, A People's History of the United States, and he kept updating it with a new administration. And he wrote the book because he complained that all the way through the doctorate level, he was never taught the history that nobody wanted him to know. So the only way he could get it down on paper was to research what's been hidden and write his own real history of the United States. And he called it A People's History. And he wrote the kind of stuff that's never taught. And he said it point blank. You get a PhD, you can get five PhDs. They'll never teach you this stuff.
Yeah, you know, that's the point. I mean, so you just can't just blame it on the mainstream corporate press or, you know, this or that. It's embedded in our culture. I mean, lying is as pervasive in this society as violence is. You know, so you get mad at the mainstream press for not telling you, you know, what's going on and what the truth is, whatever. But go to college and get a degree and not be told what's going on and what the truth is. it's much more pervasive than most people, you know, even are willing to admit. And people are willing to admit that they don't get the full story from the press, but they don't get it from their college professors.
Oh, they do. Zinn described it. He explained it, saying, the purpose of education isn't so much to educate you, it's to make you a good citizen. In other words, go along with everything the government does and believe it's the right thing. That's basically what he said.
Yeah, the educational system in America, which so many people criticize as being liberal, is so utterly reactionary that its sole purpose is to make you a pliable bit of fodder for something that the society wants to do, whether it be put you in a factory or a coal mine or in the army or whatever. It's to make you into a pliable tool. That's its whole purpose. We talk about, you know, this great American educational system. We have law schools and all of these great universities that all produce highly or viciously conservative reactionary lawyers that end up being on the Supreme Court. You know, how is that possible for an educational system to rubber stamp like cookie cutters? Lawyers that are all, you know, reactionaries. I mean, that happens. It doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen, you know, because the reactionary view is the one that is only supportable intellectually. It happens because they want to make it happen. It's the whole thing. So, you know, I laugh. One of the things I said in the paper was a nation of laws is a lawless society. You know, I'm sure that a lot of people read that and thought to themselves, what's this guy talking about? He's kind of crazy. But just think about it for a minute. If people were concerned about others and did no wrong, there would be no need for even a single law. It's because people are lawless that people write laws. And they don't write the laws to prohibit lawless behavior. They write the laws to be able to engage in retribution for the wrongdoer. That's all. Law doesn't even come into effect until something bad happens. And then what do they do? They want to punish the guy who did it. That's all. Never prevents anything. Never makes anything any better. But, you know, and these are things that are obvious when you think about them. But nobody in our society teaches it. Bingo. You still there, Steve?
Well, I'm listening. I'm listening intently.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what's happened in this society. We took 16th century people who were even hard to get along with in their native countries. Okay. Their native countries were so happy to get rid of them, they helped them, they shipped them over here. Okay. And they didn't ship them over here with, you know, libraries of uplifting books and all that. They just shipped them over here and said, hey, go at it. And they've been going at it ever since. You know, my father and mother were immigrants from Eastern Europe. They were very, very people-oriented, concerned, you know, about the welfare of people, not educated or whatever. But they were not what I would call, you know, enlightened people. They had no way to even know what an enlightened human being was. And they were uneducated. My mother couldn't read. My father taught himself to read. But, you know, he read newspapers, okay? But they were very good people and, you know, probably the most religious people I have ever known, truly religious people. But they were the dregs of the society that they left. And America didn't do anything to raise them above that level. They lived all of their lives with the same biases, the same worldview that they came here with. And that's the way it's been for 220, almost 250 years now. And we brought, you know, these poor, ignorant people to America to be manual laborers, and we've kept them that way. And this society hasn't progressed at all since the 1600s. It has not. Oh, it looks like it has, but not intellectually or morally it hasn't.
I think it's worse today than it ever was. Nobody wants to do it either.
Yeah, it's worse than it ever was today. Sure it is. So we're, you know, somebody just, I was watching television the other night. Some young researcher has just done some research on the Vietnamese War. I guess he's published a paper or a book on it or something. I didn't catch the whole thing. But he was claiming that we killed far more Vietnamese civilians than anyone has ever acknowledged. More than 3 million. And it wasn't done by troops on the ground. It was done by, you know, policies that came out of the Pentagon in Washington. I mean, what kind of society is it that can kill 3 million people? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, how many have we killed in the Middle East and Southeast Asia? I don't know. Probably millions. They're not going to tell us. And I'd love to ask President Obama, or any congressman for that matter, how we can brag about killing people in Pakistan or Yemen or anywhere else, and, you know, somehow or other pretend that we care that, well, something like 30 Americans are killed every day with guns on the streets. We don't care. I mean, you brag about the killing over there. You don't. I mean, you'd brag about it here if you had any courage, but you don't. I mean, they're just cowardly people. That's all. I'm on a rant, aren't I?
Well, this is important stuff, John. Again, I mean, violence at home and abroad really is such a vital topic. I mean, literally, America is responsible. I mean, you could take it year by year. You could go back a decade. You could go back in the last century. You could go back to the beginning. Countless tens of millions of people, the powers that run America are responsible for murdering. And it's all hushed up. It's all suppressed. Only the sanitized history that's more methodical than real is what ordinary people are told. The dirty truths are hidden from public view. John, let's take a quick break and we'll come back. Oh, we can talk about what's going to today. Obama took his oath of office. We can talk briefly about that. for John Cozy. Indeed, John, today was the official Oath of Office Day. You can call it anything you want. In a quiet ceremony around noon Eastern Standard Time in Washington, a two-minute ceremony with a handful of people, their family, maybe a few others. I don't even think Joe Biden was there. He took his oath of office at a naval observatory, I think about an hour before that. And they've probably gotten together by now. I think they did. I think they went to Arlington Cemetery to lay a wreath. You know the usual baloney that goes on. First they murder them, then they lay a wreath on their graves supporting them. They send innocent kids off to die. They don't give a damn if they live or die, whether they come back with their arms, legs, brains blown out. They don't care. But they go to the cemetery and lay a wreath, and they say whatever they say. It means nothing. So Obama took the ceremony.
You got that wrong, Stephen.
Oh, well.
they go there to lay the reef to extol their deaths. They don't want them coming back alive. If they come back alive, they have to pay for them.
Well, I certainly agree with that, John. I mean, they literally sucker these poor kids during a bad economy when kids can't find jobs with 23% unemployment, the real unemployment figure. So many people can't find jobs, and the only jobs available for most people are rotten ones. They're low pay, they're low benefit. In most cases, you don't make enough money to support yourself. So a lot of kids get suckered into joining the military, and they're sweet-talked into saying, we'll do this for you, we'll do that for you. They're not told we're going to send you to Afghanistan to get your brains blown out, but that's what happens to so many. Or, you know, they come back with post-traumatic stress disorder, all kinds of stuff. I mean, if you go there often enough, they deploy you, they redeploy you, they deploy you again, you get done with Afghanistan, they send you somewhere else. I mean, it's a constant struggle to stay alive. I mean, most of these young kids, who can put up with stuff like this? It would wear and tear gravely on most anybody. I mean, these people would never send their own family members over there. They never went over there themselves. If Hagel becomes defense secretary, it looks like he will. He'll be the only official in Obama's administration, second term, who's a Vietnam vet. He was there back in the 1960s. I don't know what he believed then, John. I know what he believes now. Murdering people around the world by the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands of millions, well, that's okay with him. I don't think he felt that way 40 or 50 years ago. I don't know what he thought when he was a young kid, but now it's altogether different. He's a rogue. Looks like he'll be the next defense secretary. Anyway, Justice John Roberts administered the official Obama oath of office. His second term began at noon today, Eastern Time. The public ceremonial nonsense will be tomorrow. It'll be a day of gross excess, that's for sure, John.
Yeah, you know that's the way it goes in government officials. You know, have you ever read my? Yeah, I'm sure you've read it. You probably got it. I've got an article out there somewhere called "The Cheney Gene." Have you ever read that?
Oh,
the Cheney Gene.
It's been a long time, John. I'm not sure if I remember it or not.
Well, it's very simple. I named a whole bunch of neocons in that article who were promoting war. And not a single one of them had ever served an hour in the military, and including Cheney, of course. And I said, you know, these people are genetically predisposed. They have the Cheney gene. The Cheney gene, what's the Cheney gene? It's the Cheney gene that gives you a rubber backbone and a yellow belly.
Well, he for sure never served in a war zone. Neither did... I don't think anybody in the Bush administration served in a war zone. Nobody of any importance. I mean, they have thousands of people in the administration. But all the top officials, what do they call them? Chicken hawks. Chicken hawks.
Yeah, well, the Congress is full of them, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the interesting sort of thing. You know, people are talking about, reducing. Congress is always talking about reducing spending. They need to reduce spending. Well, there's some stats out this past week about the net worth of the new members of Congress was well over $1 million apiece.
Oh, I have to add one thing. There is at least one former Vietnam vet in the Congress, and that's John Kerry, the Secretary of State designate, and he got a few medals for doing it. And he sold his soul once he got extremely rich. He's the richest man in the Senate. I don't know about the House. He's the rich from his wife. His wife is the Heinz, you know, the Heinz 57, the Heinz heiress. I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars they're worth. You know, they don't explain. But I do know he has seven homes, and if you're the Heinz heiress, you can bet his wealth is somewhere north of $1 billion. Could be $1 billion, it could be $2 billion, it could be $5 billion. I have no idea.
My point is that nobody ever says to these guys, hey, you want to cut spending? Fine, cut your own damn pay and work for free. You're all millionaires.
That's
you
right.
Don't need the money.
The Senate is a millionaires club. That's
and
for
make,
sure.
make them, you know, anyone running for office should be made to justify taking the pay. I mean, you know, it's a Rockefeller who's now retiring from the Senate. He never needed his senatorial pay or perks or expenses. Never needed a penny of it, but took it all. And then they complain about spending. I mean, nobody will embarrass them in public. I would, but nobody let me. So, you know, I mean, why don't somebody say to these people, hey, you know, you don't need the money. The country's broke. Why are you taking it? I'd like to hear some answers. You can't say that they're taking it because they're working so hard that they deserve it. And I'd like to know what they say. I really would, but nobody will ask.
Well, they don't deserve it. They don't deserve it. They're rogues. They're corrupt. They're on the take. They profit from insider trading. I wrote an article that goes back, a year or two now, but I talked about how people come into the Congress. A lot of them come in, you know, ordinary in terms of their net worth, and so many of them get rich in office. It's not because they earn $150,000 or whatever the salaries are. I mean, that's not exactly pocket change. They get rich because they game the system. They get all kinds of benefits. I mean, they get inside of stock tick tips. They make money on insider trading. They break the law that they enforce for other people, not for them, not for them. They pass legislation that benefits themselves.
What I want to know is why no federal prosecutor considers that prima facie evidence of corruption.
Because they're on a two job.
They're in on two, yeah. That's why. But you know, but again, it's one of the things that the people who have the ability to confront these politicians never have the courage to ask. You know, and that's disgusting. It's disgusting. You know, Congress sets its own pay. You know, the framers never intended that, but that's what happened. You know, and an easy way to fix it, I suggested this once, but nobody paid any attention. Why don't we set the pay of elected officials? Why don't we index it to the per capita income of their constituents? Be easy.
I think that's a marvelous idea, and a lot more. I don't believe that anybody good should be forced out of office. There are so few good. Maybe they should be. There are so few good ones. It really wouldn't matter very much because they have no power. But when you get somebody who the rare exceptions, like a Cynthia McKinney, who actually serves in Congress responsibly, and because of that she got voted out twice. I mean, they attacked her and they assailed her and they harassed her. But she's the exception to prove the rule. Even some of the ones that pretend to be good, they end up doing more harm than the good they claim to support. I mean, it happens over and over again. They rhetorically, they support the things that anybody would certainly want to support, a universal health care, ending the foreign wars. And when it comes to their voting record, you look at the way they go. If their vote doesn't matter, they can vote their conscience. If their vote does matter, they vote the wrong way. It happens over and again the same time.
Yeah,
I could name names.
My thing about my suggestion about the pay had, you know, this incentive attached to it. You know, if you wanted to get reelected, you had to look out for the welfare of your constituents. Because if their income goes down, yours goes down. You know, the only way to get your income to go up as a politician, if your income is indexed to the per capita income of your constituents, is to make the per capita income of your constituents go up. It's a simple economic principle.
John, I agree with that, and I'll one up you if you'll allow me to.
A good parent.
And let's just take one from a low income or a poor family. A good parent, a responsible parent, makes sure that his or her children are taken care of first. They will sacrifice their own well-being to see that their children get everything they're able to provide them. That's what a good parent is. That's what a good parent does. I would like to see the members of Congress see to it that their constituents get all the benefits that they need, especially the ones most disadvantaged that they served, and only then, if and after that's done, do they do anything for themselves, and they should avoid doing anything excessively. But first take care of your constituents, make sure it's done responsibly, and then worry about what you do for yourself. And short of that, do nothing. Work for free or leave and let somebody else come in and do the job that you're incapable of doing.
Yeah,
act like a good parent or get out of the way and let somebody else do it.
What people don't do is they don't carry arguments far enough. For instance, you know, everybody supposes that people who go to Congress want the government to work. But that's not true. It's never been true. There have always been people in Congress who wanted the government to fail. I mean, that's the way you pull off a coup d'etat. You make the government fail.
We're run by a coup d'etat government.
Well, yeah, we are, but the trouble with coup d'etats is there's always somebody around the corner looking to pull off another one. You know, and when people talk about, you know, the Tea Party members of the Republican House of Representatives, you know, being obstreperous or whatever you want to call them, what they don't realize is that those people don't want the country to work. They want a different country. I mean, that's the way it is. They want a different country. They want a 16th century sort of Protestant theocracy in America. You know, validates slave owning. I mean, that's the country they want. They're not interested, you know, in the economic prosperity for all. They're interested in economic prosperity for them and their kind. They want a different country. They don't want an America of any sorts that isn't completely acquiescent to their value system. So when you talk about why don't they compromise, why would they compromise? That's going to, you know, I mean, they're going to get their what they want that way. They want the country to fail. And I don't think maybe somebody's going to bend their wrists or twist their arms or whatever to get them to get on board to some sort of fiscal compromise policies that extend this exploitive society and economy for a while longer. But you know, they don't want to do it. They have no interest in doing it. And that's something that I don't know why, but Americans, even educated Americans, don't seem to understand.
No, they don't understand, John. They either don't understand or they don't understand enough. And the ones who understand anything, and most of the ones who understand very well, are either too dismissive or more preoccupied with other things in their life that they literally sacrifice their own welfare and they let the rogues that run the country literally get away with murder. And that's about what it comes down to. Destroying rights at home, destroying rights abroad, responsible for causing so much human misery, more than any nation ever in human history, and it goes on every single day endlessly. And in my judgment, I've written so much about him. I think Obama, by far, is America's worst president. And the worst part of him is that he's a con man. After all the harm he's caused, he still has half the country supporting him. It wasn't that way with George Bush. That's why Obama was picked to replace him. He wasn't really elected. He was chosen. That's the American system. It began with George Washington. They wanted him coronated. He was coronated. There really wasn't an election. They just chose him. They wanted him to be a monarch. He thought that was a bad idea. He stayed two terms. He set a precedent, but it didn't really matter very much because America wasn't a democracy then. It wasn't designed to be a democracy. It certainly isn't a democracy now. And Obama, oh, it's wonderful having a supreme con man in power if he can cause immense harm on a national and global scale, and half the country still supports him, and most of the people who support him are the ones in America are the ones he's harmed the most. It's incredible, John, but it's true.
When you live in this country long enough, but that's the unfortunate thing about it. You have to live in this country a long time to really realize what's going on. But Obama, is probably the worst president we have had until the next one.
Until the next one, exactly. And I've said that, too. In 2016, whoever succeeds Obama, who knows who that'll be? I guarantee 100% that person, man or woman, will be worse than Obama.
Yeah.
I wish I could put money on it, John.
Yeah, well, he can't, but nobody will pay off.
Nobody will pay off. We might not be alive to collect things are getting so bad.
Well,
that I've used in some articles is 4 more years for Obama. I'm not certain humanity can survive it.
Well, I'm not either. It's not just Obama. It's the American political way. I mean, we are on a self-destructive path, and it doesn't matter who gets elected to what office. We're on a ridiculous, ridiculous self-destructive path. What was I reading? Okay. We're spending all this money and political capital on fracking. Okay, which takes gallons and gallons and gallons and gallons of water.
Oh, very destructive stuff, John. A couple of years ago, I wrote an article on it.
And the politicians in the state of Texas, support that activity. Okay.
They sure do.
They have suddenly discovered that if they don't find new sources of water very quickly, there won't be any water in Texas for people to drink. But they still keep fracking. I mean, I don't know how dumb people can be. I don't know how dumb Secretary of Defense Peñata can be when he threatens these people who killed Americans in Algeria with we will pursue you to the ends of the earth and forever and ever and ever, and we will get you. There's no place to hide. How he thinks that influences anybody when these guys, when they get up in the morning, they put on their suicide vests and go out. I mean, how in the world are you going to threaten somebody with death who wears a suicide vest? And here's the Secretary of the Treasury. I mean, excuse me, Secretary of Defense, Offense, Secretary of War. He's making this idle, bombastic threat. People are laughing at him, but he doesn't seem to realize it. And that's the way it is, with everything in America. Everybody wanted health care reform. And, we need health care reform desperately in this country. But what did he give us? Medical insurance reform. Well, nobody's getting any healthier. We're just paying more for it. And then people are making more money off the till. I wrote a piece about obesity, and I said America has an obesity crisis, but we will never solve it. Reason we won't solve it is because you make too many people are making too much money off of obesity. You know, look at all the companies that would go out of business if Americans weren't obese. Yeah. And that, you know, that's what's going on in this nation. I mean, you know, we're told, people are told that they're doing this, they're doing this and that for them, but they're not. They're doing it for somebody else. Who was it? Oh, I guess the Romans did it even before Lenin did it. But, you know, ask yourself when you're looking at a proposed policy, who stands to gain? That's where you find out who it's being done for.
Oh, you betcha. Qui bono. Well, it's always about profits and power and privilege and the rest of it. You know, the same old stuff. And most people don't give it a thought. They go along with their daily lives. They're mindless about all this stuff that goes on. It's the most important stuff they ought to know enough about to realize how they're being scammed, how they're being harmed. But they pay no attention, or they don't pay enough attention. And I say it on this program, John. They worry more about who's going to win the Sunday ball game than about their own welfare or their kids or their grandkids.
Yeah, you know, but it's tougher than that. Most people, you know, I was reading an article on some economics blog the other day about, you know, is the truth passe or something like that. And I thought to myself, mister, the truth has never been important. Too many people have too many daily concerns to be worried about what's true and what's false. It's only a few guys like me who got time on our hands who worry about what's true and what's false. I see people every day who don't really have time enough to keep their kids clean, no less worry about what's truth and what's false. Yes.
John, I understand that because I was preoccupied in my life as well. I was very concerned and upset about so much went on, but I didn't have time to go out in the streets or to write articles or to host a radio program or do what I have all the time in the world to do now in retirement, and this is what I decided I wanted to do. I didn't really plan it. It just happened, and I've explained that on air. So I understand those things very well, but things are so much worse now than when I grew up. And I mean, the harm being done to people who understand enough to realize, my God, it keeps getting worse year by year by year. Doesn't matter whether it's Bush, Obama, or the man on the moon. I mean, it's going to go on. And where on earth do you draw a line and say we're not going to take this anymore? When do you really do something? And if you don't care about yourself, do it for your kids or grandkids. So I understand that. And at the same time, I understand that if people don't do something, it's going to get so bad that America will, the metaphor that I like to use is America will be no different from Guatemala at its worst. It's already a police state. America is a hair's breadth away from full-blown tyranny. How much more do they want to wait for before they finally realize something is wrong, and if we don't change it, it never will be changed? So those
are
the things that are on my mind.
Yeah, you know, there's a phrase that I've used in a number of my pieces about America's collapse, and I've also said that someday, you know, we'll change the name to Guatemala, North America.
There you go. Oh, indeed. John, I was informed last week that we will end the program 2 minutes before the top of the hour. Case closed. So when the music begins, we get about 60 seconds. Let me give it to you for a final thought.
Well, I don't know if people are willing to accept the levels of violence that are occurring in the world and America's role in it, then I don't think there's any hope, not only for this nation, but no hope for humanity at all. I mean,
it's a tough reality to face eye to eye, John. It really is tough. We are out of time. I've got enough time to thank my listeners for tuning in, to thank you, John, to look forward to your coming back next month.